Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
And just as sure as the sun will rise and set, so Wendy has tweeted to say, Alan is not speaking for the 17 million people. We voted to be completely separate from the European Union. We want to leave the single market and the customs union, despite Alan suggesting that there are many millions of people who voted leave, not wanting to leave the single market and customs union. It's incredibly difficult to get a definition of Brexit that everybody is going to settle on, but the government is going to have to do it at some stage, and they are going to have to put it to the European Union. And then we'll see what happens. We'll come back to your calls in a minute. 10 to 4 is the time. Let's speak to Ashok Modi first, though. He's former deputy director of the IMF and author of a book called Euro Tragedy, A Drama in 9 Acts. Thank you very much for coming into the studio this afternoon. Tell my listeners a bit about what your book says.
So my book says that the euro could do no good. It could do a lot of harm. It need not have been. It almost was not. It can only get worse, possibly much worse. That's why I call it a tragedy.
And why do you say that? Why do you say that the euro is potentially facilitating the breakup of the European Union?
It has no economic foundation. That's its core problem. It cannot possibly do anything that's good to improve the welfare of people. But a single currency with a single monetary policy does not fit Germany and Italy. Italy is a fragile economy. Italians have not invested for two generations in their economy. Therefore, the monetary policy tends to be too tight for Italy.
And you're a former deputy director of the IMF, so you know your eggs. But is that because Germany's economy operates in different scales, so things like inflation rates and pay and costs can't fluctuate within a single currency that isn't that flexible?
Yes, so what happens is that if you have one monetary policy, the same interest rate, that one interest rate is too tight for Italians. It is too easy for Germans. Therefore, if it's too tight for Italians, Italy is already a weak economy, and that tight monetary policy makes it weaker. Whereas for Germany, it's an easy monetary policy. Germany is already growing, so it helps the growth further. Mm. So the divergence continues to increase, and that's the fundamental problem.
And at some point, when those cracks start to emerge and they start to become wider and wider, the bridge that goes across them might start shaking a bit. Do you suspect that this is part of the reason why the European Union project is in having a difficult moment?
Yeah. So another reason I call it a tragedy is that these warnings were sounded as early as 1971. A British economist, very well-known economist, one of the most important of his generation, Nicholas Calder, said, not only will the euro create more economic divisions between nations of Europe, it will create political divisions. And he cited the well-known biblical phrase, a house divided against itself cannot stand. Mm-hmm. And in a way, Calder's ghost is stalking the Eurozone right now, almost 50 years later. Pretty much what he said is happening now.
And as well as the sort of financial divisions, the political divisions that we're seeing between Italy and Germany revolve, I would say, particularly around migration and immigration. And those are, you would suggest, fault lines developed as a direct result of the euro.
So I would not say that the migration fault line is direct result of the euro. What I would say is that the fault lines emerged in 2012 and 13 in the crucible of the worst era period of the crisis. The antagonisms, the national stereotyping emerged earlier. That's, you see the birth of the five-star, the growth of five-star in AfD. In turn, over time, those political movements have also evolved into anti-migration.
So would you advise that the European Commission says to nations that we want to keep the euro, so we're going to make it a bit more flexible, we're going to be able to allow it to be flexible enough that Italy's economy can cope and Germany's economy can cope? Is that possible, or the answer is just in order to get rid of that problem, you have to get rid of the euro?
It is not. The great success of the euro is that it is not flexible. It's designed to be not flexible. Therefore, you cannot, if you have one interest rate for the Eurozone, there's nothing you can do to differentiate that interest rate. So what it means is that either there is there are fiscal transfers, that is, the rich countries transfer money to the poor to compensate them, which will not happen.
So what would you advise the European Commission to do that? I mean, is your assessment that the euro is going to disappear?
My assessment is that the euro at this point is a very fragile construction. It could linger on, it could muddle on for a while, and the only hope for the euro in the longer term is that if the Italians and other countries in a similar situation are able to generate a growth momentum domestically so that they are not so handicapped by the single monetary policy.
And if the euro were to be done away with, what would happen to countries like Ireland and Spain and Italy that use it? They would go back to their own currencies.
So my vision of this is that if it comes to the breakup, that the only country that can somewhat safely, the least painfully exit the euro is Germany. So I would say that Germany should exit, and then I think Netherlands, Austria, etc. will follow, and it'll gradually unwind, and countries would, in that very sort of futuristic vision, go to their own currencies.
I know your book is focused on the euro specifically, but if we broaden it out to, you mentioned countries exiting, broadened out to the European Union itself and Britain's new relationship with it. We're hearing all these warnings from businesses about trading on WTO rules that might make it very difficult. How, as someone with your background, Deputy Director of the IMF, is trading on WTO rules sustainable for a big business like Jaguar Land Rover? Is it a good thing? Is it basically okay for them to be able to do that?
Look, I don't follow the sort of detailed negotiations and the very specific...
there are a few that do, to be fair.
and the sort of very specific alternatives. What I have written about on Brexit is that the costs of Brexit, the official costs of Brexit, not just sort of the very over-the-top costs in the beginning, but even later costs of Brexit are tend to be sometimes overstated. And the real story, the real message of the Brexit vote, which is also common to other European countries, is that it was not, I think, principally a vote for exit. It was a vote of cry of despair. So a student of mine and I have done a study which shows that those who voted to leave were from the Rust Belt areas.
Yeah.
They were on the wrong belt side of globalization. But equally importantly, and I think this is very important, those who did not vote, the kids who did not vote, many of the young did not vote, they live in socially dysfunctional urban areas. And so they also are crying for despair. I think that's the big message.
We're going to run out of time, so let me ask you this question very quickly, and it's probably an unfair one. But if you, I don't know whether you voted in the European Union referendum in this country, which way would you vote if you had been asked to?
I would have had a hard time voting.
Join the club.
Because... I can see both sides of this story. And I believe that selling Europe as an economic project, I think the mistake the Remainers made was to sell it as economically beneficial. I think if they had sold it on some higher ideals and principles of an open society, of social justice, I would have been much more comfortable voting for Remain. But as a purely economic project, I don't think the economics justifies the project in its entirety. Yeah.
Fascinating to talk to you. I'm really grateful for your time this afternoon. Thank you very much indeed. Ashok Modi is former Deputy Director of the IMF. He's author of the book Euro Tragedy, A Drama in Nine Acts.